Hey, John.
Hey, Nick.
I was trying to think of a tragedy to compare the Dakota Access Pipeline to.
Right, but that's like comparing Dapples and Orangemen. Like Trump.
And this is Stranger Still. Phlegm, and it's not good.
Okay.
It's not good podcasting material.
You're always sick.
I know.
Because you're not vegan.
I'm sorry.
And
Maybe I
speaking
should
of
do that.
vegans, we have one on the show today.
You?
Another one.
Cody, you're a vegan?
I'm a vegan, baby.
I didn't know that. All right. Well, everyone, welcome our guest today. We have Cody Snyder. I can't say it because I have phlegm. Cody Snyder.
Let me translate.
Yeah.
It's Cody Snyder.
Yep. He
is. Nailed it. All of them work.
He's our expert today. Welcome to Stranger Still. I'm Nick Wood.
I'm John Began.
And this is a podcast.
And we explain strange things that you normally wouldn't question to ask. But.
Yeah.
Today.
It's not such a strange thing. I guess it is strange because, like, who in the world would do this to humans?
All right. But we took a break from normal science-y stuff to. Bring Cody in and talk about some important things that are going on in our country.
Yeah. And this is something, we were talking before, it is ginormous and it's huge and it's complicated and there's so many things that go into the Dakota Access Pipeline.
And it's not covered enough.
And it's not covered enough. So, when I learned about it, I became furious, for reasons that we'll get into. So I think our goal here is hopefully to present the facts. I will present them as unbiased as I can. I know that it'll be hard for you guys to do, and I don't blame you, so don't hold back. But we're going to go into the Dakota Access Pipeline, and it's not funny, but we're going to try to be our cheery selves as much as we can, right, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we,
you know what? I think it's pretty on brand for you guys though, because it goes deep. You know, there's layers to this thing. So I mean, I think you get right back, right down. I mean, this is right down Conspiracy Row, which is, you know, on par with what you guys do at a certain point.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So we should probably talk about what the Dakota Access Pipeline is at some point. But first, I want to formally talk about Cody. And what he brings to the table. So Cody, tell us what you've been doing for the last like couple weeks.
Past couple weeks. I'm a director, and I went down to the Dakota Access Pipeline to shoot a music video documentary hybrid, that it actually, funny enough, it was started kind of as a favor. It was a music video for my father, D. Snyder.
Oh, who's that?
Was formerly the lead singer of Twisted Sister. And yeah, so it kind of turned into this. We wanted to do something, and so we took the budget and we put it into just getting this very nice camera and as a skeleton crew and going down with AIM, with the American Indian Movement, which for those that are not familiar with AIM, they're essentially the Black Panthers of the for the American Indians.
Yeah.
American Indians, and went down there with our liaisons, the director of the California branch of AIM, Gray Wolf, and he gave us access to things you couldn't normally get access to, and we were there for the November 20th, I don't know what you want to call it.
Protest?
Bridge situation.
Event?
Yeah.
Yeah, event where 1,000 water protectors were just... you know, assaulted by law enforcement inhumanely, and then the major media outlets ignored it and, you know, witnessed it all firsthand. But yeah, so I just got back from that, and the video just released actually today through Vice, so you can check it out. It's called So What.
Yeah, we'll be posting it everywhere because it is very moving, and if someone doesn't know about the Dakota Access Pipeline, I think it quickly sums up everything that's happened for the last, like, 6 months.
Oh,
in
yeah.
a very succinct way. So Cody was there on site. So he
or is, the past 6 decades too. Or 600 years.
Yeah. Yep. 500 years. Yep. Yep.
It goes much deeper. Yeah. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. So, DAPL, where do we begin? That's what we're calling Dakota Access Pipeline, by the way. It's just DAPL. So I first heard about it in 2014 when they were trying to get Iowa to sign off on it. Because, Cody, I don't know if you know this, we're in Iowa, and they cut right down the middle of Iowa. So they're trying to get Iowa to sign off on it. And I hate to say this, but 2 years ago, I didn't care about what was going on outside my front door.
Yeah.
But now, especially in the climate that we're in now, and I have a child, I've started to care. So that's why I became so passionate about this, because like we're living in the purge out there. It's literally the purge over in North Dakota right now. And cool, I'm raising a child in that now. Yeah. That makes me feel good about bringing a child into this world. Anyway, I said I wasn't going to get biased, and then here we are.
No, be biased, dude. Yeah. I don't care.
So this is, we should all be biased. We live here. We're destroying the planet, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. But the facts: back in 2014, Dakota Access LLC, which is a subsidiary of, oh man, I have their name in my notes somewhere. Do either of you know?
The energy transfer. Yes.
They are
ETP partnership and also Sunoco.
Yes, yeah. They're a subsidiary of Energy Transfers, and they brought this plan together to build what was essentially a straight line from northwestern North Dakota down through South Dakota, through the middle of Iowa, ending in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
It was like basically a straight line. If you look at the map, it's just like point A to point B. And the purpose of the pipe that has caused so much controversy was to carry oil from Bracken oil farms in North Dakota down to Illinois for storage. Cool.
Yeah, pretty good.
yeah. The reason, though, the Dakota Access State, they say the purpose of it was to take the transportation of oil off of railroads so that if something derailed, it wouldn't explode.
Oh,
so
that's very safe of them.
It's very safe. They're very safety conscious. And it would help America become more energy independent.
Yeah, and then you don't have all the emissions from all the truck drivers that are transporting the oil, so you can take their jobs away too.
Yeah. Here's the thing. The whole thing that I just said is controversial enough. Like, energy independence with oil, that's bad enough. But on top of that, Dakota Access, that it would create jobs, right? That's good.
Yep.
That's what we want in the Midwest. It would create between 2,000 and 4,000 temporary jobs to build it, and then a whopping 12 to 15 permanent jobs.
Holy wow.
And this is a $1 billion project to create 15 permanent jobs. Cool. So that's the, that's the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Okay. Around that same point, I think this will fit in too, and I don't have the facts in front of me, but I remember that their whole standpoint was, besides creating jobs, that it would help benefit Americans in many different ways, whereas they're saying like, oh yeah, this oil will be, it won't be exported, it'll stay here, whatever.
Yeah.
But they're not oil companies. They are FedEx. They are delivering the oil.
Yes.
So it's up to those companies to decide what to do with it. And in reality, it would just be exported out of the country and sold anyway.
And it's all kinds of, it's not just Dakota Access or Energy Transfers that are in on this.
Yeah.
I was going to get to it later, but like Phillips 66 is in on it. I think you said Sunco's in on it, right?
They're merging with the ETP, the Energy Transfer Partners.
Yeah.
But okay. Enbridge, it's a conglomerate. It's an oil conglomerate.
Yeah. So it's, there's all these companies that have put into this $1 billion project so that they can have the oil for themselves and do whatever they want with it.
Yep.
Why would that ever be controversial, guys? I don't understand.
This isn't controversial. This isn't a controversial because this isn't a controversial issue. This is a very one-sided issue here, and I know you guys want to play, you know, stand in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I get it. You don't want to be even-handed.
No, no, no.
The way to be.
We're being totally
there's two
sarcastic.
Sides to everything. There's two sides. No, but I hear you. It's the interesting thing is that in dealing with this and doing interviews, everyone always wants to come from center, as you should. And I'm a firm believer in the middle way.
Yeah.
You know, there is a paradox at play in this existence. And, you know, if you want to get to the heart of any truth, you need to understand and live in that paradox. this is as black and white of an issue that's out there, yeah. Politically speaking. Americans benefit very little from this.
Exactly.
And you already said it.
Yeah,
you already
it's said the top it. Of the top that are benefiting from it.
Exactly.
Which I think is a good segue to basically what I want to talk about for the rest of this, which is all of the things that have caused the protests, starting very, very simple. Just the things that I talked about before. They said it's a necessity to get oil transfers off of the railroads, and it's going to make America energy independent.
Mm-hmm.
You guys want to talk about that for a second? Since when is fossil fuels the future?
Yeah.
They're not the future.
Yeah, well, exactly. We've got wind energy. We've got solar energy. I may as well bring it up. I'm sick of people saying clean coal because that's a myth.
It's a myth. Like, it's fiction.
None of the fossil fuel stuff is the future. So there's strike one. Second, you already covered this. It's not going to make us independent because they're shipping this oil out of the country.
Yeah.
For a profit. Getting a little deeper here. What if the pipeline leaks, which several environmentalists have said is very possible and
inevitable.
It's inevitable.
It's inevitable. There's more than a pipeline leak a day.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, Cody, what was the deal? Do you know the numbers behind the 221 leaks that were hidden?
Are you talking about? Because what I've been told is that ultimately that it doesn't even register as a leak if it's under 1.5%.
Yeah.
And I also have been told that essentially the oil companies actually own the companies that do the oil cleanup as well. Therefore, it's actually profitable for them to have oil spills.
Oh, wow.
Wonderful.
So, I mean, yeah. No, this is not – I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, you guys were saying it's off-brand. It's not that off-brand. I mean, what a corporation's job is to keep itself – flourishing alive.
Absolutely.
It's just like any entity. Its goal is survival. And big oil has been behind a lot of energy suppression and free energy suppression for a long time. I mean, you guys deal with science and, you know, talking about Tesla all the way, you know, and all the scientists who have tried to tap into the magnetic field and use the energy that we're surrounded by. I mean, that's a whole nother, that's borderline conspiracy level stuff when you have all those scientists that are dying.
That's
who try to come out with free energy. Yeah.
One thing that I almost talked about on our conspiracy theory episode was how GM took away the trolley system so that people would buy cars.
Oh, wow.
Like they basically 100%. Yeah, they got rid of the trolley so that they could make money. It's awful.
There's no trade in LA because of the insurance lobby,
right?
The car insurance lobby. And I first was under the impression it was earthquakes. That's why there was no trade. And then I found out the insurance lobby kept it that way.
Oh, good.
But yeah, there's documentaries. Who killed the electric car?
Huh?
You know, I mean, this is
fairly new, isn't it?
This is an age-old story,
yeah.
About the suppression. So I mean, that's why the people. This is a huge movement. The people needing to come together and get rid of, you know, move to a sustainable platform and get mm-hmm. you know, away from this idea of just taking and taking. You know, we do live in a abundance is the planet is abundant. We don't need to be living, being addicted to fossil fuels.
Yeah.
It's just not sustainable, obviously.
Yeah.
That's why we're here talking about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, and you touched on something there where, first of all, it is a platform of us needing to move to a more sustainable thing, but then it also branches off into Native American rights and how we're taking advantage of them. And it just goes so much deeper, which is actually my next bullet point. A lot of the protests now are happening at Standing Rock, which is sacred ground. Correct me if I'm wrong, it was land granted to them in a
1850.
Treaty. Is that right?
Yeah, they're building on treaty land. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're on reservation land right now, but the pipeline is being built on treaty land. They're violating treaties.
Exactly.
According to the indigenous people I worked with, they have no permits. And that they're violating treaties.
Yeah.
You know, when I would vet this online, I find that all the oil companies, I get information about a long due process they went through with permits.
Yeah.
But to them, they're like, nope, no permits. They can't have permits here. We're a sovereign nation.
That's all the coverage. I mean, all the news outlets that are covering this, that's what I've heard as well, is that they don't care about permits. And Obama denied the one, 2 days ago or whatever, and now they're saying that they're probably going to ignore that as well.
Yeah.
Like, they don't care. And not only the fact that they don't care about these checks and balances that we've established in our country, but they're breaking the law.
Yeah. So the police are facing the wrong way.
Yeah. So there's that. There's all the political... Well, what's that?
Yeah, no, the police are facing the wrong way. Beautiful sentence right there.
That is stolen almost directly from the Young Turks.
Well, it's very true. Yeah. We have a police force that we pay for, that taxpayers' dollars, and they are militarized and armed and working against us. And they're breaking these corporations are breaking law after law, and yet the people are the ones that are paying for essentially a militarized police force that are against them. You know, I mean, it's a great, you know, and that's really, it's crazy that these corporations have the ability to tap in to our police that are supposed to be there to protect us.
It's awful. And I think that's the first thing that bothered me about the whole DAPL situation. And I guess how I latched onto the whole thing, and then as you go deeper and deeper, it doesn't get any better.
No, it starts out as like, oh, that's really messed up on a humanitarian level, and then, oh, this is disgusting.
You get down to like the Native American level, you get down to the corporate level, it's disgusting. So let's see, what have we covered? We've covered
what it is.
Everything. The last thing that I wanted to cover is all the political ties that it has with him. Mm-hmm. Just Trump himself. I don't want to spend much time on this, but Trump has had two investment ties with companies that are involved with the Dakota Access Pipeline. He had up to $1 million in energy transfers invested in 2015 as they were making these plans, and then up to $250,000 in Phillips 66.
Yeah.
So our president-elect has a conflict of interest in this atrocity, is what I'm going to refer to it as.
Right. And even beyond that, with like the gravity of what was happening, I know that there's been a lot of criticism and like this stupid election is like getting all of the news coverage right now because that's what's making profit, and there's not much profit to be made when you're covering people like this, because there's racism in this country and they don't care about indigenous people's rights. So when it comes down to stuff like that, like Obama's obsessed with his legacy and what he's going to leave behind, and it took him this long to enact this and say, well, let's see how things play out, while people were getting their arms blown up and getting maced in the face and shot at and all that. So that was beyond frustrating. And then you've got leaders that could have been in leadership right now, like Bernie Sanders, who went down there to speak. So,
well, you know, Obama's been pretty good in talking and working with the indigenous people. Obama's been pretty good for the indigenous people as far as presidents go. And, you know, there's only so much he can do. And when I was down there, Obama had recently enacted, essentially, he said there's no drilling 20 miles of the water.
Yeah.
And he says there's no drilling, and ultimately there was a $300,000 fine if you did drill, and they just said publicly, screw it.
Yeah, they don't care.
And they eat the money.
Yeah.
But that's the most he can really do. But, you know, then you have the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers come out, and they say, hey, we're not gonna allow this, and they have publicly said it doesn't matter to them. They have no plans of rerouting, and they're gonna keep building. I mean, there's just no accountability. There's no accountability.
Yeah,
right.
So what can we do, right?
Yeah.
We can protest.
Well, I want to know Cody's firsthand experience. Whatever you're willing to tell us about your time there, what you think is important for people to know about.
Well,
Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
Sorry, real fast. I want to give a history of all the protests.
Okay.
And then we can talk about your firsthand experience, if that's okay.
Cool. Yeah, of course. So, whatever you'd like.
This is disgusting, if you have any semblance of a soul. So I believe, and once again, correct me if I'm wrong, the protests have been going on since June? Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
It was late spring, early summer that these protests started at Lake Oahu.
Ohai. Hey,
I actually don't even know how to pronounce it. I was there. It's Ohai.
Ohai. Hey, look, we got a joke in here.
Hey, we got a joke. one, and let me mark that. So they started protesting at Standing Rock, and from spring to now, there's been thousands of people out there, Cody included. They're 100% peaceful, and I want to make that very clear, because there was reports of one violent protester, and they tracked him down, and they caught him, and he had ID on him for the oil companies.
Yeah.
The oil companies had planted him there to make it look like the protesters were violent.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case. So first of all, they were attacked by, or they were met with attack dogs from the police force. People were getting...
That was private security, was it?
That's private security that works for the oil companies. There you go. Yeah, yep. Which is even far worse.
Yep, they were met by attack dogs from them. People were getting arrested for if they were showing as being at Standing Rock on Facebook.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, where a lot of
people signed in to try to...
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of people checking in at Standing Rock so that, like, no one could get arrested. In the video that Cody has and plenty of videos online, you can see people getting sprayed with fire hose water in sub-zero temperatures to dissuade their protesting. It's escalated to macings and tear gas. People have been hit with rubber bullets. There have been concussion grenades. And one lady, I think you said this before, almost lost her arm because of it.
Right. So,
am I leaving anything out?
No, I mean, I'm sure Cody's got plenty to tell us about this, but through hearing this, like, I get it. You can see this on the news, and you know it's awful, and you can see when you just see pictures of things, it doesn't feel real, and that's why I wanted to bring Cody on.
Exactly.
Besides the fact that I love you, and we've been friends for years, and we've got to get you on something a little bit lighter in the future, I think.
Yeah. That's something so depressing. So,
but
no, look, it's important. This is the time we live in. I mean, yeah. The beautiful thing about the internet and information, I mean, with information and knowledge comes a lot of responsibility, and that's just where we are at right now. You know, there's ignorance is no longer an excuse, and yeah, I mean, I think all of us need to reconcile that. Yeah, we just all need to take part. So, I mean, this is most important to me. Yeah, Nick, and I don't know if there's any other thing you want to go through, but I mean, I witnessed everything you said.
Yeah. Let's hop into it. So, tell us, I don't know where you want to start. What have you seen?
Just go.
Look, I it's like John said, it's one thing to read, it's one thing to see pictures and videos, it's another thing to be there, and we're going to have a very different tone talking about this.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
I thought I was so I mean, but it, you know, what I witnessed, man, it traumatized me.
Yeah.
You have no idea. It traumatized me. I thought I was going to shoot a protest. I swear to God, I walked into a revolution. It sounds like hyperbole. There's a revolution happening in this country. And
well, and can yes, I say I hope so?
That's what I'm saying. We all talk about it. We talk about civil war. We talk about revolution. We talk about change. We talk, we read, we learn, we watch documentaries, and then I walked smack into it, and I didn't even know. I thought it was a protest. These people are so organized. You're in the middle of nowhere, camps of thousands of people. They have their own security force. They have their own kitchens. They have their own medical units.
Uh-huh.
They are so organized. If you want to do direct action, as it's called, you have to go to direct action training. There's orientation. There's
really?
Prayer centers. You have no idea how organized
you're
this
right,
is.
You're right, I don't.
And that is the thing, and that's not what I expected,
yeah.
How organized they were, and everything's free. Everything, it's egalitarian and communal, and it's beautiful. And because white people have always, you know, they step in and they want to lead, and they want to say how to do things, you know, it's really important that this is indigenously centered. And I keep saying this, but how poetic that, you know, the people that were colonized and exterminated by this same greed that's infected our society, and we see all the symptoms all around us right now of all these sick institutions, they're now leading the way in this revolution. They're coming together for the first time ever. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but this has been prophesied by the indigenous people that there was a black snake that would cut through the land and threaten to destroy Mother Earth, and that it would unite all the tribes for the first time ever. And this would be a movement led by the indigenous youth that would unite all the tribes, and they'd come together to fight the black snake. If they beat the black snake, ultimately, jeez, it would usher in a new era of consciousness, and it would unite all of humanity. If they lost, we would lose the earth, essentially. And this is the prophecy, and all of it has come true up to this point. All the tribes have united, and this was all led by the indigenous youth.
Yeah.
And this is the first time they've been open their doors really to white people. I mean, we betrayed them hundreds of years ago. And you know, I mean, we don't really talk about it. We talk about terrible events like the Holocaust, you know, but we forget about events like the transatlantic slave trade is, you know, we don't know, from 17 to 150 million people died in that. The indigenous people, there were 150 million indigenous people believed. And, you know, there's so many of them that have died. They feel betrayed. And this is a big deal for them to open their doors back up and to us. But I digress.
Well,
I'd wanted to, yeah, go
you
ahead.
Got, you got to a really good point there that there has been some progress made. Like I said before, that Obama rejected their permit, and even if that is progress in the right direction, and even if this thing gets shut down, there's still, I hope that it opens the conversations about how we're treating the Native Americans, because like you said, we've ignored it for how long. It's not okay.
Well, yeah, there's another story that I saw today at work, and that was really touching to me. That was on the Young Turks, and it was about how it was Wes Clark went to his idea was he felt like he just needed to go there and do this, and he's a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And so he brought the 2,000 veterans with him to help like protect the water protectors, right? And there's what became an iconic photo, and the Young Turks were kind of talking about how he's a pretty selfless guy, and he said that if you go into something selfless, then it usually comes out to help everybody. You can't think about trying to help yourself, you gotta try to help other people. So he went there, and I think there's this photo that came out of it that all the media took pictures of him, where he went down and kneeled before the indigenous people and just apologized and said like, I'm sorry for, like, it was more symbolic because he didn't physically do anything.
Yeah.
But I'm white, we messed up real bad, and I'm sorry. And there's this really beautiful photo of him kneeling before them that was like really touching.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's a formal apology for the war crimes
that
committed against them.
Right.
That's a powerful thing, and that's the kind of conversations that need to be had.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to atone for all that's happened and reintegrate with them. But one thing I want to get back to, because this is really important, is
derail.
No, it's cool. I digress. I start going off into genocide.
Oh, what a relief!
Slipped into genocide again.
Yeah. Well, we needed a break from all the darkness.
Yeah, no, but I think one of the most most fascinating thing. There's two really big things I try to when people ask me, I try to want them to know about.
Yeah.
One is how organized they are. I'm in this now. It's so secretive in the camp. No one knows when action's going to go down, direct action, because there are infiltrators from the oil companies in the camp.
Yeah.
So everyone is very suspicious of one another. It's very quiet. And when something goes down, it's like, boom, it's happening. And right away, everyone mobilizes. It's very fascinating.
Wow.
But of course, where they're looking to shoot. So we're trying to find out information. So we go to an orientation. They have an orientation every, I think it's 10. I mean, they have multiple throughout the day, and it's for all people. And there's these three strong, young, powerful women, all different races from Ivy League schools, and they're sitting there and they're going, they spend a lot of time talking about gender roles, whiteness, how to deal with the indigenous people, you know, keeping it indigenously centered, you know, what customs we can partake in and what we, you know, what we can and everything like that. But then it starts getting into questions like, okay, who's going to the front lines? You know, half the people raise their hands, right? How arrestable are you? You know, some people raise their hands. Okay, write this number on your wrist. Don't carry your license with you and $20 because they might not give you your phone a phone call. They're like, don't have it so you can unlock your phone with the fingerprint because they can make you unlock your phone. They might take, you know, your stuff, so you might not want to have belongings on you. Don't use the indigenous fund if you can to bail yourself out. Part of our strategy is to flood the prison systems. Do not bail yourself out. There is no alcohol in your system or drug of any choice, no marijuana in your system or on your persons. And these people have learned from past protests. They understand that the drug war was directly used to squash the Vietnam protests and, you know, to arrest black people, but it was predominantly to squash the Vietnam protests.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand. So this is a completely clean camp. There's no partying. There's no drugs. And it is freezing there,
right,
and uncomfortable. I was in four layers of clothes, and it's incredibly uncomfortable, harsh winter conditions.
You can't get
this is much more north. Yeah, this is not Burning Man.
Right.
This is not, like, people think it's like a big party and it's a bunch of protests. This is brutal living conditions. And they're all helping each other to survive, and it's this beautiful egalitarian community. But the point is that I'm there and I'm listening to them talk about going to the front lines, how arrestable you are, wearing a bandana and covering it in apple cider vinegar to help with the tear gas, and how to rinse out your eyes when you get maced, and talking through detail after detail on how you don't have to be on the front lines. You can be medical. You can be this. You can hand out earplugs and goggles and this and that. No weapons, not even a pocket knife, nothing that they could use to incriminate or arrest us, and how organized they are. And they're saying, and if you're going to the front lines, you go to direct action training at 3 p.m. It's like this long training where they in detail teach you how to be nonviolent, how to sit there in peaceful prayer, and how to essentially treat yourself after you are assaulted, and then what to do once you're arrested. And like a bolt of lightning, I'm like, I'm in this green tent, this military tent with just no light, no phones, no cameras, just a couple holes of light coming through as everyone's talking and these three women talk in front of a whiteboard. And it's, I look around, people from all over the world, all different countries, all different races. And I'm like, oh, whoa, wait a second. This is the freaking revolution. This is a revolution happening. This is crazy how organized they are. It was like being in a military camp.
Yeah.
It was so intense.
Yeah.
And that is a big thing. And I'll put a period at the end of this rant. But I mean, it really is. They're so organized and peaceful. It really is a revolution. It's very crazy to say out loud, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's very true.
That's incredible. Like, that was part of a lot of the questions that I had for you, is because I had no idea what the protests were like out there, what the living conditions were. Like you said, that they have pretty robust camps, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge, huge.
So I guess while you're out there and you show up with a camera, were you welcomed with open arms or?
No.
Yeah, I figured.
No, if I wasn't with the American Indian Movement, being able to say, people would come up pretty aggressively because of all the infiltrators, and they would say, what are you doing? What are you shooting? I'd say, I'm here with, I wouldn't say I was shooting a video for Dee Snider. I just say, I'm here with the American Indian Movement. I'm here with AIM. And it was immediately, for the most part, like, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I one morning, 7 a.m., get out of the car, pick up my phone, take a picture just for my own personal use. A water protector comes up to me and says, I'm sorry, but you know, you didn't ask for permission. So you have to ask for permission always, and everything, it's very strict there. I couldn't shoot the fires because the fires are sacred. I couldn't shoot the drumming because the drumming was sacred.
Oh, wow.
You have to understand, the indigenous people, everything is sacred. It's something we've lost as people. And one of the most amazing things, to go a step further beyond the revolution, I mean, because it really is something of a revolution, is you have all these predominantly youth, these people who are disenfranchised with the establishment, with the religious establishment, with the political establishment, with the corporate establishment, and they are going there because they want to do something, and they feel helpless. They want to do something, and they're forced to abide by the indigenous practices and the indigenous lifestyle. And predominantly, it is centered in prayer.
Yeah.
And they are praying by the sacred fire, which hasn't stopped burning since they started the camp. They pray by the sacred fire, and so all these atheistic scientific materialists revolutionaries coming there and are being forced essentially to reconnect with earth and spirituality. It's a beautiful thing to witness, these people getting healed while they're there, and it was amazing, man. You have no idea. But I mean, that is so, it is so centered in prayer. Everything is prayer with them. They have, and it's like 9 o'clock prayer, 2 o'clock prayer, and the elders meet in this big dome, and they the day of November 20th, the big clash, they were there for like, 12, 15 hours. Everyone's like, what are they going to say? What are they going to say? What are the elders going to say? And they're largely pacifistic. I mean, so they just sit in prayer, and they don't really they want to avoid conflict and violence at all costs.
Yeah.
The sun had actually set, and we had packed it up for the day, and we were like, oh, wow, you know, nothing's happening. And then we get a call, and it's like, there's action on the bridge. Now, just to explain this bridge phenomenon, it's not really a phenomenon. It's more of just the framework of what's happening on the bridge.
Yeah.
They say that there is structural damage to the bridge. There's not structural damage to the bridge. I've seen it. There's many cars and 1,000 people on it. There's not structural damage. But by saying that, they've been able to, the National Guard has been able to shut off every road to the pipeline. And so they have these, they have this bridge, which is essentially barricaded from entering the pipeline. So the idea was everyone's like, we got to take the bridge to get over to the pipeline. This is treaty land. They have no right to be there. They really can't even do that to private roads anyways. Right. But by saying there's structural damage and they have to be there, they are creating laws where they can incarcerate people if they are on the bridge. What's up, Nick?
No. Yeah, no, I'm so fascinated. This is
okay. I'll keep going.
Yeah.
it's a lot. I don't want to be monologuing about this, but it's dense.
This is the thing. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm like, I'm enthralled. Like, I just keep talking. I don't know what else to say.
All right. No. I'll keep. Yeah. I don't. It's intense.
Yeah.
So okay. So that is, and you know, I'll digress a little bit, especially because in the name of trying to stay moderate, this is a largely peaceful movement, but you know, the bad apple spoils the bunch. I mean, you have people, you have people who are just like you have in the military or the police force, who are overexcitable or sure, aren't following the indigenous path or whatever. But for the most part, it is all centered in peace. But ultimately, we get a phone call and there's action on the bridge, so we do it. We write our name, we leave all our wallets and everything. I'm sorry, we write the phone number on our wrist, we leave our wallets, we take our ID and $20, we wrap ourselves up in our bandanas and everything, and we go down there, and we get there, and it is a straight-up war zone. I was stunned in my path, and there's 1,000 people on the bridge, and they are with multiple water cannons just hosing down the people in sub-freezing conditions. And like I said, I was in 4 layers of clothing, yeah, and I was freezing. I couldn't believe how these people were up there. And it was very much like Saving Private Ryan, where you just hear these, like, you know, in that one long shot in the beginning of Saving Private Ryan, you just hear these, like, these dimensions of what's going on. And I watched waves of martyrs run to the front lines, and they would run to the front lines, and they get sprayed with water cannons, and they get maced and tear gassed and shot with rubber bullets. And they were sitting there in prayer. I watched people on their hands and knees praying and cha-cha-pa, 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 as they're just mid-prayer, just sitting there, just getting shot over and over and over again. 2 elders went into cardiac arrest. A 13-year-old girl got shot in the face with a rubber bullet. I watched people get their heads busted wide open. A girl from a direct hit to a flashbang grenade blew her arm apart. She nearly had to get it amputated. I think there's 20 operations.
Yeah.
It was a war zone, and I'd watch martyrs run to the front lines, get beat and beat and beat, and then I'd hear, clear the road, clear the road. And then a truck would back up to the front lines. The water protectors would load up the injured into the truck. The truck would pull out, and then another wave of martyrs would rush to the front lines. They'd get beaten until they couldn't take it anymore, and they'd be like on the ground in the fetal position. The other water protectors would grab them, throw them on the truck, and it happened for 9 hours and all night long. And there's all these people in the back handing out, like I said, there's this very like loving, peaceful vibe where everyone's just trying to help each other. So you have this whole other layer where everyone's just running around handing out earplugs because of the LRAD sound cannons they were threatening to use or using. I have no idea. They were repeatedly saying this is a test of the LRAD sound weaponry or whatever. Yeah. But I've heard people say they don't use it. They just say it to scare you. And it did scare everybody. Everybody freaks out. So. And then everyone's running around handing earplugs, handing goggles. But then, yeah, people running around with water bottles with milk or milk of magnesia or whatever it's called.
For the
like pouring it in people's eyes. Yeah, running shields, like these like jerry-rigged
riot shields,
you know, like shields.
Yeah.
Yeah, tarps, clothes. But the point is I would watch these people get dragged out. They'd be crunching because they were in sheets of ice after walking away from the front lines. Most of them would have to be carried out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd watch this go on for hours, and I would try to get my crew as petrified. I tried to push them to the front lines, almost cursed, just like a jerk. Like, we gotta go, and they'd be like, "I'm pushing, pushing." We finally get them to move up because it's horrifying. These guys are war; they're martyrs, yeah. Martyrs. I can't believe just sitting there with a fist in the air, holding a peace sign, or sitting there in prayer, or you know, in front of them, just being beaten and maced. But we finally get to the middle, not even to the very front, and we're tear gassed immediately. Yeah. By the way, not fun. Did not. I thought it was like, oh, it'd be like eating something spicy. It's like not terrible. It's blinding.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Choke. Your nose runs. Your ears are like all messed up. And then like everybody just starts like trampling one another because it creates this crazy environment where everyone just freaks out and you're like people are falling down and getting stomped on and it's crazy.
Well,
and then yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
sorry, I just made a note.
No, it's cool.
Myself.
I'm Bradley.
You had said before water protectors, and I just want to be clear. I don't think we defined that before. Those are the revolutionaries, as you.
They don't call themselves protesters. If you say protesters, they are, hold each other very accountable.
Yeah,
they held us very accountable. And you cannot say the word protest or protesters. They're water protectors. And if you call them protesters, and part of that is because of the negative connotation
sure.
that comes with the word
yeah.
protester. It's
perfect.
Like, you know, they don't have jobs, they're delinquents. And this is not; these are not the same couple thousand people. They rotate out.
Yeah.
People come for a few days, they go back to their job. They fly back where they come for a week. Most people, they're so moved, they stay. But yeah, water protectors.
Yeah.
That's what they call themselves.
Perfect.
And they are.
That's yeah. the definition I wanted. That was pretty.
Yeah.
Something else you touched on there too. What is the feeling like out there? Like, is everyone upset or are they energized or what would you say?
It's mixed. I mean, you just have different levels of like consciousness of like kind of how aware they are in their own framework of what's happening. So like some people are really angry and upset. I mean, the next day, the following day that happened, 'cause that went on all night. You know, like I said, we were all tear gas. My cameraman was shot with rubber bullets, targeted. Like, we got to the front lines. He was immediately targeted. They saw us with the camera and just started firing on us, which is suppression of free speech and free press. You can't do that.
Yeah.
That's unconstitutional.
That was one of my other questions. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Yeah. But the next day, everyone was walking around like zombies. And there's a ton of psychiatrists and therapists there that were there just to help them with the PTSD. And, you know, all the elders would say they weren't present. They were all in their heads. And but the vibe prior to that was very much like like going to war.
Sure.
The energy, there's a lot of people praying. And I was involved in these ceremonies, which were kind of, you'd make sacraments to the fire. And essentially, I'm just watching these indigenous people being like, if we have to die, we die. You know, this is for Mother Earth, and you know, and willing to die. This has to change. And I'm just a pawn, essentially. I'm just a conduit. You know, it was beautiful. They're just saying they're willing to, because so many of their people have died before that. This is not unheard of. This is a reality for them. But it's so some people understand that there is an awakening taking place in terms of the human consciousness and awareness of what's happening, and that excites them. But then there's also an anger that of what's going on and that no one knows. And an untrustfulness or distrust because of all the infiltrators in the camps. And that's the thing. I mean, it's like, they keep getting beaten and they stand there peacefully. Oh my God, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I watched, and they hold each other accountable. That's another thing I want to get across. I watched them physically throw a water protector who had something on him. I think it was a homemade mace or something. But I watched them physically mobilize against this person and remove him and strip him from what he had. Like they self-regulate each other and they understand them, because all it takes is one person to have something on them, one person to do something or to attack an officer.
Absolutely.
And it, all of a sudden that's it. Have a drug on them.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Anything.
So
the whole thing.
So it's real discipline. Yeah, it's a house of cards.
What do they do
if
they are able to locate an infiltrator, and how do they know that are infiltrators?
I don't know. They know there's infiltrators because they've caught them. I mean, Nick, you just told a story about someone that was essentially he was you know, he was a bad apple, so to speak, yeah. and he had an ID. He worked for the oil company, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things like
with
that.
With a gun. Yeah.
Right.
I watched the whole time. There were planes flying over the camp with no lights on.
So, okay. I've heard of those as well. There's rumors around the camp, I heard, that when those planes fly over, the cell signals go out.
Yeah, so you actually are riding the that's the truth. What I first heard was that they're dropping things. And I didn't see them drop things, but people would say, "Oh, they drop powders," and it's very conspiratorial. It's almost chemtrail-esque, and they would get sick. So I never saw that, and what it seems is that they're jammers. Because that is true. There's no signal. There's no way of getting in touch with people. There's something called Facebook Hill, which is a hill that you can get like minor service. And that's kind of like the administrative tents where if press comes, you go to get your press badges and stuff. So I mean, like I said, this is a fully functioning town.
Yeah.
And it gives the water protectors some ground to stand on, especially the water protectors who are Americans and are not indigenous people, because they're a sovereign nation. They do not abide by our laws, really.
Yeah.
But we don't really respect that. So, you know.
Okay.
So it doesn't really matter.
So circling back to censorship, so you had to get out of there to wrap up your music video, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was only there. I mean, I'm, you know, yeah, the budget would only allow for us to be there for about 5 days. Yeah. So and I had to come back and edit and color it and then get it out, hopefully as soon as possible. But in terms of the censorship, yeah. And D, my father, he was on the Senate, a Senate hearing for the PMRC, which was essentially a movement, Al Gore's wife, Tipper Gore, and this, like, board of women wanted to ultimately like rate every song and ban songs for profanity and lewd language. This is the reason we have the warning parental advisory sticker. Oh. That's ultimately what happened. But my father and three other musicians were the only people that kind of stepped up and went to the Senate hearing and defended our free speech and music. You know, it was very taboo and he doesn't regret it. It's one of the coolest things he's done, but it was not great for his his image and his career. But that's why no. Yeah,
sounds like it's close to your heart, though.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Sure, it's so, messed up. The most important thing we have is free speech.
Yeah. So when you, I have like three more questions. So when you were getting ready to go, what did you want to accomplish? And how did that change as you were leaving?
It's completely different. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was going on. I thought it was a protest.
So
I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know I was walking into 500 years of colonization.
Right.
Oppression and abuse and that no one pays attention to.
Yeah. So when you went into go ahead.
No, please.
When you went into it, was it just like, I'm going to film this thing for my dad and we're going to get some protesting on tape and then we're going to be out of there? Or was it
the way you described it to me the first time that I heard before I saw the video was like a Straight from the Path music video. And then, you know, like when they have like intercut shots of like, they're a local hardcore band on Long Island and then became national.
I thought I was going to go and like shoot like the protest lines. I couldn't get to the lines. Mm-hmm. It's so violent. I couldn't get there. I mean, one, you have to realize these water cannons destroy all the equipment anyways. Yeah. And that's part of it. They destroy, like, I brought essentially a bazooka to a knife fight. I brought $500,000 camera to, and they're spraying us with water cannons. Yeah. We could barely get close, you know? And plus, like, we don't have the lights for, you know, they have these massive lights that are just spotlights on the people.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like all the people are lit, like almost like a, I don't know, like, you know, in prison, and you're just surrounded by this military with sniper rifles on all the hills and all these rail guns pointed towards you. And all you see are these silhouettes of these armored people and these tanks, and they're just pointing guns at you and shooting and throwing grenades at you. And it's like, it's crazy. And you just hear cries everywhere, cries. And people screaming and medic. It's like war.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. But I didn't know I was going to a war zone. That's the thing. And they were, I didn't expect them to be so organized and so protective and secretive. I thought like they'd be, oh my God, yeah, media, but they weren't, because they're like, the media's misrepresenting them.
Of course. Yeah. They're siding with the oil companies, which is great.
I'd watch, they're like, tell the truth. They kept being like, tell the truth. There was no media on our side, and there was a media truck on the police's side.
Do you remember what company it was?
No.
Okay.
No.
So,
I have no idea. I didn't see one name. I didn't see, and that's the thing. The next morning, the worst part of it was waking up. I woke up the next morning, went back to the bridge, and it was still going on before the elders called the people off of the bridge. It was still going on. And and the worst part was the next day seeing the media ignore it. Like nothing ever happened.
Right. Yeah.
Like I just witnessed the craziest event of my entire life. I just went, oh my God, there's a war happening in America. And I was like, this has to be covered.
Yeah.
Nobody covered it. And then they called it a riot. And then the police denied using water cannons on civilians. They said they were using it to put out fires.
Yeah, to keep all of them safe. Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
The people shaped fires.
Mayor Dapple said that.
Their flares were starting the fires, and the water protectors were putting the fires out.
Yep.
You can see it. There's footage online. It's crazy. And they're like, yeah, and they weren't putting the fires out. They were spraying people in the face.
Right.
They were spraying women and old people in the face, and other people, but you know, that too.
Yeah.
But yeah, they ignored it, and then they pretty much, the police just painted it in whatever light they wanted to, and that was the news people got. And yeah, so that was the shocking thing.
Okay.
But yeah, you were going to say something, Nick, before I ranted again.
No, I think you answered whatever I was going to say.
Yeah, I think we're about wrapped up, unless you got like...
I have an off-the-wall question that just came to me. I was robbed at gunpoint once, and that was a traumatic experience. I still have nightmares to this day. So my off-the-wall question is, do you have nightmares of what you went through on the 20th?
I don't. I was mugged in Harlem and by a group of people. I was beaten and had my stuff taken. And that was like, you know, I can feel that when I walk around, like keep looking over my shoulder, like when I'm alone in a street like that.
I remember you telling me that, and they took all your gear, your film gear.
Yeah, that was a thing. I mean, that was just like, I didn't even see them. It was just like on the phone. Next thing I knew, you know, but you know, Nick,
because
you've had that experience. I'd be lying if I said I have. Obviously, it'd be more interesting if I said I was. I'm more like heartbroken, man.
Yeah.
I really am.
I think that's fair.
I really am. You have no idea, like, this, like, it's really bad. It's really bad. It's really freaking bad, and I can't convey it. I can't convey it enough to people. And, you know, I would read about the greed of the oil companies. I know, we all know that we need to move past it, and we know we can. You know, for a long time we've been not moving in the right direction when it comes to energy.
Not even just energy, just human rights.
Yeah.
Human rights. Oh my God.
So my
human rights.
I'll go on.
Yeah, go
ahead. I was just saying my take on that. I didn't care about politics a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I started getting into this because of Bernie. I saw him speak in a group of like 30 people down in Marion. And he high-fived my cousin who was living in Seattle at the time. And I went up to Bernie and I said, hey, Bernie, you high-fived my cousin. Haven't seen him in a while. Can I give you a high-five through him? And I gave Bernie a high-five, and that was cool. And like,
that's on video.
Yeah. I'll tell you one other story. It's off-topic, just like a little refresher. I met him another time in downtown Cedar Rapids. And he was going around taking pictures of people, and Jane was talking to him, his wife. And I went up to him, and everyone was taking pictures. I said, hey, Bernie, could you take a picture of us? And he said, yeah, sure. So then I handed him my phone so he could take a picture of me and my girlfriend, and I posed with her. Like, he was going to take the picture of us, of me and my girlfriend with our arms around each other. And he's just like, what are you doing? And he started walking away. She's like, no, he's just joking. I want to take a picture with you. You don't have to take a picture of us. So he walked back. But ultimately, his movement, he inspired me to get involved in politics and to know what's going on in the world. And part of that was getting me introduced to the Young Turks, and that kind of got me involved because I know they used to interview him all the time and things like that, and that's kind of why I'm in the know of what's going on with this. And I think that like it's important to keep this stuff up and to know what to do going forward, because everybody talks about how important this election was, but
it's
when you really think
so many things,
what made a difference in this country? Do you remember President Harriet Tubman, or do you remember President Martin Luther?
Oh, I see.
The king, yeah. So I'm saying activism
is
what makes big changes in the country, not presidents by themselves.
100%. What do we say about, I mean, look at all the most venerated figures in of all time. They're all revolutionaries. Yep. Jesus was a revolutionary. Yep. That's why he was crucified. This dude shaking it up, calling meetings, preaching love, and trying to get the military, the police force, like, to stop arresting people. Gandhi.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
I mean, how do we treat? I mean, this is the same battle that's been going on since the beginning of time.
So that's what I'm saying. I mean, in this political climate, like, I know that there was a small victory with Obama's saying, you know what, we're not going to give them the rights to do this, and they're saying, you know, screw you to it. But that's why I think it's important to know what to do next with this situation, that activism is important, sharing things is important. Sharing this podcast will be very nice for us, but it's important to get the message out there.
The thing that I want to close on, I feel like there's more that we could do, but I feel like we're doing the best that we can by hopefully educating some of our listeners. But Cody, from your perspective, what can two yokels in Iowa and some listeners of their crappy podcast do to help out?
Look, I mean, there's the easy answer, which is, like, you can donate. There's websites you can go to. It's officialaimsocal.com. That's the American Indian Movement. So I work directly. I know that is a good, you know, your money's going to a good place. Mm-hmm. And that will go towards Standing Rock, as long as you, like, stick that in the memo when you donate money. You can call the White House, you know, you can get the number online, you can share the information, you can have a dialogue with people, you can educate yourself about fracking, about tar sands. Tar sands, a lot of people don't know about that. I had Enbridge, one of the oil companies that's involved in this conglomerate, there was a worker who his job was to cover up oil spills. They would put dirt and sod on top of them and build playgrounds over them. And he lost his uncle, his dog, wife had a miscarriage, kidney failure, and showed me 600 hours, showing me his footage of all these people with debilitating migraines. They can't work their job. I mean, just people. This is not something that we're trying to stop from happening. It's happening every day.
Yeah.
The toxification of our water supply, of our fish, of everything. So, I mean, educating yourself and talking about it is a really important thing. But, I mean, honestly, you know, we all need to look within ourselves and change the way we exist and we live. There, I forgot which tribe it was, but they had everything in nature only takes what it needs. You might have heard this before. Everything in nature only takes what it needs. A tree only takes as much water as it needs from the soil. A lion only eats as much gazelle as it needs. And the tribes would understand that if you took more than you needed, if you wanted obsessively, it was a mental illness. It was called Wicca. They treated it like a mental disease. You were quarantined and you were treated because you wanted more than you needed. Indigenous tribes from all over the world with no contact with one another all understood this as a fundamental pathology. If you want more than you need was a pathology you would treat with medicine. They knew when the European imperialists came over, they were infected with Wicca. And we have an entire culture based off wanting and taking and taking and taking in excess. Our culture is imbued with that fundamental philosophy. And we all need to look within ourselves and reconcile with that part that just takes and takes and takes. I do think that's the core of this. So that's my two cents on that. Yeah.
Damn.
So we've gone on for a long time, and I can't thank you enough for sitting down with us for way longer than you probably needed to.
I apologize for my long time.
No, it's like I said before, I feel like I don't feel like we're doing enough, but I feel like we're doing what we can right now.
Yeah,
and that feels good on some respect. Just spreading the knowledge. So again, thank you.
Thank you guys. Thank you so much for talking about it.
We've got this very touching documentary music video that you've done. Where can people go find that?
It was released through Vice, but it's on the internet. It's D. Snyder's music video. The song's called "So What."
It's a good song.
Google
too.
It, or you go to Noisy and you like it. It's definitely appropriate for the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and it wasn't the single label Sony was going with, but when I, when we, it's funny how this came about. A Native American man named Pony, who was the manager at a 10 Degrees in Los Angeles, came up to my dad and like pulled out his ponytail and like got on one knee and was like, please help my people.
Oh, wow.
Like, so this is going on. Could you just talk to any of your friends you have in Hollywood, anyone that could come down and like pay attention to it? And my dad came to me and was like, you know, what do you think about Standing Rock? And I'm like, yeah, it's crazy. Let's go down there and do it. So, I mean, we brought him down as our liaison and, you know, it was life changing. But the point is, but digress. But that Pony, though, the manager at 10 Degrees who approached my dad and got him to essentially be willing to put all the money for the music video to help create awareness for Standing Rock.
Yeah.
He's the opening Native American and he's the closing Native American in the movie. The music video. His name's Pony. But yeah, just Google it.
Awesome. All right.
Google it. Point is, go to Vice.
No, it's really a beautiful thing. And if anyone's listening to this and you haven't already Google searched it or put it in your favorite search engine, you need to go do that.
Yeah.
Not even just as like a promotion thing, just it's moving. It's yeah. Incredibly moving. So do yourself a
Thank
favor.
You.
I don't think we have anything else to talk about. What do you think?
No, that's about it. I mean, we usually close saying our Twitter handles and stuff like that. And I guess that's important for communication. If anyone has something to say about this, we have a Facebook group.
Yeah. First of all, spread awareness of DAPL in general.
Yeah.
Just do that for your sakes and our sakes and our world's sakes and my child's sakes.
Yeah. You can't donate. You can share a donation link.
Yep. If you want to open a conversation, you can do it on our Facebook page or on our Twitter. Cody, do you have any Twitter? I think you said you don't have Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, I use it. Especially after this, I'm going, all right, social media, that's its purpose here. That's its purpose here, to keep us connected.
If someone wants to open a conversation with you, how can they find you?
It'd be at Cody Blue Snyder. As my Twitter handle, and that's how you do it.
Beautiful. All right.
Yeah, come talk to me, spread the word. Yeah, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
I appreciate you guys talking about this and having me on.
Absolutely,
we appreciate it too. Let's close it out. I'm still Nick.
I'm still John.
Oh, and I'm Cody Blue Snyder.
were you or are you still?
I don't know. Was I? And I'm Ron Burgundy.
this is Stranger Stuff.
And this is Stranger Stuff.